Chapter 10. We jumped in as close to the Roach Motel as we dared without going close enough to risk the ship. How close we could get was not a hard line. It was a guess, and I had asked Skippy to be super conservative about it. Once we arrived, I requested a full day to examine the sensor data as best we could, and for the crew to double and triple-check every piece of equipment we had.
"Is the sensor data showing you anything useful, Skippy?"
I asked.
"What?"
"Sorry."
I finished chewing the sticky peanut butter sandwich I was eating for a late breakfast in my office. That morning I had gotten out of bed at 04:30 to help Major Sims pack away and secure supplies. After my quick brunch, I was going to work in the hydroponics compartments, harvesting any crops that were ready. With the crew extra busy, I had declared a fend-for-yourself day in the galley, so no team had to spend the full day there.
"Oh, I understood you the first time, Joe. It is not polite to speak with your mouth full."
"Damn, I sound like Nagatha," he grumbled.
"Well, the answer is, sort of. The useful information I am getting is what is not in the sensor data."
What?
"The data looks correct until I examined it very carefully. The stealth field surrounding the star system is broadcasting a low-fidelity image. The elders either think species outside will not notice the difference, or..."
"Or what?"
"Or," he chuckled,
"this is a way of the elders saying, 'Screw you!' to the universe. Either way, it tells me the data coming into our sensors is worthless. It doesn't tell us anything about what's inside that stealth field. I can tell from the movement of surrounding star systems that the mass of the Elder system is less than what I'm seeing through the sensor data. So we have no idea what we will be jumping into. There is a star at the center of that stealth field, I am certain of that.
Anything else is a guess, Joe."
He sounded miserable.
"Are you okay, Skippy?"
"This is it, Joe. This could be the end for me. I never thought there could be an end for me. Now my only chance to survive is to jump a ship full of monkeys into the unknown. I am not filled with confidence. We monkeys will do all we can to find one of those damned conduits for you, Skippy." Maybe the look of determination I was trying to project was lessened by me licking sticky peanut butter off my upper lip. "I know you will, Joe. What I'm worried about is karma will take this opportunity to bitch-slap you into another dimension. Oh, crap, what the hell? It's not like we have a choice, right?" I needed to make a note to myself that Skippy should never be considered as the ship's morale officer.
"Sir, the jump drive capacitors are at full charge, and you may proceed when the ship is ready, Colonel," Chotek surprised me by saying.
I didn't know what to say. The ship was fully prepared. All we needed to do was things like closing exterior vents and people strapping themselves into seats.
"I'm sure you want to make preparations for the jump, placing damage control parties, assuring all personnel are strapped securely into seats, all that."
Chotek turned to look at me with a sad smile. He probably wished he was back on Earth doing something easy, like negotiating peace in the Middle East.
"Yes, sir," I responded slowly. I thought you might want to wait here for a while before we make the final jump in."
"Why?" "Master Skippy has already stated we will not get any more reliable sensor data until we are past the stealth field surrounding the system. I believe that while we remain out here, we risk whatever entity protects that system deciding we are already too close and attacking us here. It would be a shame to come so close and never see what in that star system is such a secret. If this ship is going to risk destruction anyway, I want to see what's in there. What is the American saying?"
"Which one, sir?"
"Something about the folly of taking half measures."
"Oh, I was thinking, you can't be a little bit pregnant, but that probably was not what Hans Chotek had in mind.
How about, with bacon and eggs, the chicken is involved, but the pig is committed?"
"No," he smiled. "I know that expression. I was thinking, in for a penny, in for a pound."
"Ah, a pound was English currency, but I wasn't going to argue with him about it."
"Yes, sir. We'll take 2 hours before we jump. Give us time to make certain all our gear is secured, double-check all systems, and that everyone gets a bite to eat. If things went sideways after we jumped, it might be a while before the crew got a good meal. That is a good idea, Chotek said, likely contemplating what he could get from the galley before we jumped. Before you go, I have one last question for our friendly beer can. Usually Chotek referred to Skippy as my beer can, so this was different. I didn't know what to make of it. Whatever diplomatic training Chotek had often made his expression unreadable, and I reminded myself never to play poker with him. Skippy, I asked. His avatar appeared on Chotek's desk. Yes, Joe. With what do you propose to waste my time now? Chotek actually smiled, though I couldn't tell if it was sincere. With asking how you can be sure that whatever entity is protecting that star system will accept your ID codes. That is your entire plan, correct? Transmit your ID codes and hope for the best?
Yes, Skippy said slowly in the voice parents use when speaking to slow little children.
These codes are known only to elders, so they will—
How do you know that? Chotek demanded, his smile fading.
You are basing your assumption on data you have taken from the senior species, correct? What if the Rindaloo or Maxalts have elder codes, but have protected them in databases you don't have access to?
I turned from Chotek to Skippy, wondering how Skippy would respond. Because Chotek had a good point. A very good point. I wish he had raised this question before we set course for the Roach Motel, but maybe the thought just occurred to him. I know what that was like. It happened to me all the time.
Because, Skippy replied slowly, the codes are not simply ones and zeros or any lame encryption scheme. I use the phrase ID code to make it easier for you monkeys to understand, but what I plan to use are not simply codes. It is a communications method. How I transmit is almost more important than what I transmit. If the Rindaloo or Maxalts had access to this method, they would be using it, because it would give them communications that cannot be intercepted or decrypted. This communications method is deep elder technology. No current species has ever glimpsed the theoretical basis of this technology. Do you have any more time-wasting questions for me?
I spoke before Chotek.
I don't suppose you could share this technology with our science team.
That would be no. He emphasized the last word in an extra condescending tone.
I still have restrictions against sharing advanced technology with primitive species. There is some good news, Joe. You know how I am not supposed to reveal myself to starfaring species and how that has been causing inner conflicts for me because we're aboard this ship?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I agreed.
Well, the way you apes were a miserable failure at flying the ship without me has relaxed the internal pressure on me. Apparently, whatever system monitors my behavior has decided that the monkeys aboard this ship are passengers only and pose no threat. So, goodness all around.
Yeah, goodness. Tell me, O Magnificent One. You have access to this super-duper elder communications method, even trapped in a tiny corner of your beer can?
I think so.
Chotek and I shared a glance, and we were not smiling.
What do you mean, you think so? I demanded. We're about to jump into the unknown, Skippy.
This is a hell of a time to tell us you're not sure you can do the only thing that might keep us alive.
Hold your horses, Joe. I have used this elder communications technology before, and I am capable of transmitting the same way even now. The reason I said I think so is because I was being completely honest with you. Without an elder device receiving my transmission and replying back to me, I cannot be 100% certain my transmissions are going out correctly. But I am 100% certain there is no trouble with the transmission on my end.
Does that make you feel better?
No, I replied honestly.
But I understand what you're saying.
One more question. How can you be certain that whatever entity is protecting the Roach Motel will be capable of receiving transmissions in this elder communications method?
That is a good point, Joe. I had not considered that. However, he added as my face grew red,
any such entity would be pretty much useless as a guardian of elder technology if it did not have access to elder communications methods.
And you are sure this system is protected by something the elders left behind?
I pressed my point.
What else could it be, Joe? Skippy asked smugly.
It could be the Roach Motel is guarded by whatever mysterious beings threw Newark out of orbit. That was after the elders left the galaxy and before the Rindaloo developed star travel.
We know there is an unknown player out there, Skippy. How do you know that unknown third party isn't the one guarding the Roach Motel? Maybe they're guarding it because they want to keep the Elder Tech they find to themselves.
Well, shit, Skippy said disgustedly. You picked a fine time to ask this question, Joe. Why the hell didn't you think of this earlier?
I didn't, I said with an apologetic shrug to Chotek. I just thought of it now.
Hans Chotek sat back in his chair and let out a long breath.
Colonel Bishop, I have become aware of how inconvenient it can be to ask questions at a time that is perhaps too late, but such questions must be asked regardless.
I am sorry, sir, I said sheepishly.
Until we have an answer, we can jump away.
Why? Chotek surprised me by asking. I don't see how our situation has changed. Our only possibility of restoring Skippy to full function is in this Roach Motel, correct? That has not changed. We have already agreed to jump in there, regardless of the level of risk.
Yes, sir, but we thought the risk came from Elder technology, and now it doesn't matter. Our mission commander shook his head. We have no other choice. Any possibility of success and survival is better than the certainty of failure and death we have right now. We go, when the ship and crew are ready, Colonel.
Mr. Skippy, I assume you are ready at any time?
Affirmative, Skippy replied without a smart-ass remark.
It is settled then.
Chotek slapped a palm on the table.
We go, for better or for worse.
At least, he said with a wry smile.
We hopefully will get a glimpse of what is so secret in that star system, eh?
We jumped. The main display blinked and switched from a generic star field to a view centered on a dot representing a fiery hot orange star, and I knew we had survived entry to the Roach Motel. That was a huge relief. One of our fears had been the ship would be torn apart inside the jump wormhole or sheared into atoms as we exited the event horizon on the far end. If I died right then after the jump, at least I had gotten a glimpse of the big secret, which, truthfully, didn't look all that impressive. It was a star, like any other star. The sensors were still resetting, so we couldn't yet detect any planets, but the star wasn't surrounded by a habitable ring or a Dyson sphere or any sort of cool alien megastructure.
Skippy, how are we? I asked, when I was able to let out a breath trapped in my lungs.
Fine so far, but that could be just blissful ignorance. Sensors are still resetting, Joe. We can't see much.
Ooh, crap.
Whatever you do, Joe, do not attempt to jump. We are caught in an extremely powerful damping field.
Well, hell, now we know why ships never jump out of here. They can't.
Understood. Colonel Chang, secure from—
No! Skippy shouted. No, 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 no.
Give me a sec. The ship lurched. No, it skewed. Like half of every particle, including whatever I am made of, suddenly slipped sideways from the other half. Instantly, I got a blinding headache, and my eyeballs felt like they were going to pop out of my head. The main display went blurry, and it wasn't only my vision causing the blurriness. The display flickered weirdly as if part of it were in 3D and the other part not.
Skip.
Jump option, Zebra! He screeched.
Jump?
My agonized brain faintly reminded me there was no option Zebra in the drive nav system. Skippy must have programmed that option on the fly.
You just told us not—
Screw it!
Jump!
He roared. Desai, who was clutching one hand to her own head in terrible pain, did not wait for my order. She pressed the correct buttons, and we jumped. Or we tried to jump. There was an ear-splitting, horrific shuddering accompanied by a shrieking, groaning sound of something being twisted and torn, then artificial gravity cut out, and I felt the ship, the entire ship, flip end over end. My head whiplashed back and forth despite the restraint field dragging at my scalp. This field jump was much, much worse than anything we had experienced before. For a split second, the ship and crew and everything around me, including me, went transparent, followed by a blinding light. When it stopped abruptly, I wasn't able to talk. The sensation of every atom in my body being tugged apart went away, then returned full strength a moment later. That was the easy part. Skippy was shouting something I couldn't hear over the cacophony. The only piece of information I could focus on was a section of the main display indicating the coils were building up to another jump. What the hell? We just barely survived one failed jump. Why the hell was Skippy setting us up for another attempt? Before I could ask him, I saw the display flip to a jump countdown, then the drive coils pulsed.
No!
I choked, before a flash of light more intense than I'd ever seen flared inside my retinas, and I blacked out. Skippy later told me I had been unconscious for several minutes, and I was one of the first people to revive because the restraint field of the command chair helped protect me. That, plus a fist-sized, creepy, spider-shaped bot crawling up my arm to inject me with some stimulant helped revive me. The spider was still attached to my arm when I opened one eye.
Gah!
I goggled through a mouthful of spit and something tasting very bad.
Joe, it's okay.
Skippy's voice came to me faintly like he was deep underwater. My head and my eyes and everything hurt.
That is a medical bot. It injected you with stimulants to wake you up and nanomeds to counteract the mild concussion you suffered.
The burst of adrenaline surging through my body from seeing the creepy spider bot was working better than any stimulant he could have shot into me.
What?
Relax a minute. Relax, he said soothingly as the spider crouched, then gently pushed itself off my arm to float through the air and zero gravity over to land on Desai's neck. As I blinked tears from my eyes and tried to focus, I watched as the spider bot injected our chief pilot, then crawled down her arm to reach its next victim. Next patient, I told myself. Between adrenaline and Mad Dr. Skippy's patented wonder drug, I realized I was feeling fairly alert and not remembering when that had happened. The two pilots and the crew in CIC were reviving, and by painfully turning my very stiff neck, I saw Skippy had the spider bots bypassing the inert form of Hans Chotek to attend to more important crew members, which were all of them. For a second, I guiltily thought Chotek might be dead. Then he coughed out a slimy bubble of mucus and whatever he'd last eaten. The bubble hung in the air in front of his face, and that wasn't the only one. Many other disgusting objects were drifting around both CIC and Bridge. Ugh. I realized I'd gotten some in my hair, and hoped it was my own.
"Damage report,"
I ordered in a strangled voice, and for a brief moment I was channeling my inner Captain Kirk. Spot was still swimming in my vision, and my ears were still ringing.
"Unknown at this time, Joe," Skippy's voice responded immediately.
"The sensor suite is offline. I am working on it. My own internal capabilities are too degraded to be of much use. I am working on that also. I can report that we probably lost the aft engineering section of the Dutchman."
"We what?"
"The ship's spine was severed just aft of the docking platforms. We have lost all reactors, plus the jump drive and normal space maneuvering capability."
"Severed?"
I couldn't speak. With the engineering section, we had lost the part of the ship that made the Flying Dutchman a ship. After all we had gone through together, our pirate ship was broken beyond repair. There was no point asking Skippy or the dazed CIC crew about the condition of what was left of humanity's first starship. "What went wrong, Skippy?"
"Mistakes were made, Joe," Skippy said in a dismissive voice that was way more cheery than I expected given the situation.
"Mistakes were made?" I repeated incredulously.
"Did I say that wrong?"
he asked innocently. The common usage of human rhetorical expressions sometimes confuses me. What is the correct expression for when you know you screwed up, but the worst part of it is some jerk who will not let it go? You just want him to shut the hell up so you can move on, but he keeps blah, blah, blah yelling at you like that's gonna help. While I pounded my forehead with a fist, Major Sims in the CIC responded for me.
"Mr. Skippy, mistakes were made is the correct expression."
"Oh, good," he said happily. "You do not," I scowled up at the speaker in the ceiling because Skippy's avatar was not operational. "Sound sincere about being sorry."
"I am sincere that I want to forget about it. Is that good enough?
Anywho, am I the jerk who will not let it go?" I interrupted him. No? Kinda guessing what you want me to say here, Joe. Oh, for... Since we've all agreed to put this little incident behind us and move on... Little! We have not agreed to... I began to say until Sims caught my eye, shook her head, and made a slashing motion across her throat. She was right. And damn it, Skippy was right also. Yelling at our beer can wasn't going to accomplish anything. Ah, hell, we can discuss this later. Later is good. Skippy sounded relieved. Never would be better. Is never good for you? Recalling my mother's advice, I took 3 deep, calming breaths before answering. Skippy, forget about what went wrong. What happened? See, now we're getting somewhere. To make a long story short, Joe, I was correct that this star system is actively patrolled by Elder devices. They are the reason why no ships or probes have ever returned from here. I was also correct, you are welcome by the way, that because I am of Elder origin, these devices would accept my identification codes and halt their attack. However, and this is something I totally could not have been expected to know before we jumped in here, remember, Joe, you agreed to the lame-brained idea of jumping into a star system that is a dead-end roach motel. I mean, seriously, what the hell were you thinking? So, when we jumped in, we were instantly attacked by weapons that act as sort of guardians, and I transmit my ID codes. Everything is good, right? But no, that would be too freaking easy. Because these guardians expect me to transmit the proper codes from another phase of space-time. Which I can't do, and you knew that before we jumped in, because I told you I could no longer do that. 3 more deep breaths. It was not helping. I so very much wanted to toss him out an airlock. Maybe a 4th deep breath would help me achieve inner peace. Skippy continued while I struggled with inner rage. Getting back to my point, the guardians hesitated. That's the reason we're all still alive now. Then, when I couldn't talk to them through a higher space-time phase, they resumed their attack. What was that failed jump for? Remarkably, I was able to focus on what was immediately important. It wasn't actually a jump attempt, Joe. We can't jump. This system is saturated with an extremely powerful damping field. What I did was use the quantum resonance of the ship's jump field to transmit ID codes in multiple space-times. The jump field collapsed almost immediately, but I was able to send a message through the jump field, which the Guardians accepted. Unfortunately, they had already begun warping the fabric of space-time around the ship, and even after they realized that effect, it snapped the Dutchman's spine forward of the engineering section. That was the explosion we felt? The reactors and drive capacitors blowing up? No, Joe. He used his Professor Nerdnik voice to lecture me like a small and especially stupid child. If that happened, nothing would be left of the ship. He left the duh implied rather than spoken. When I realized the ship had been torn apart, I knew the drive capacitors were about to rupture and the reactors would explosively lose plasma containment. Either one would vaporize the entire ship, so I channeled the drive capacitor energy into a 2nd jump field. This one was designed to create a shaped bubble of space-time that directed the explosion away from the forward section of the hull. Most of the explosive energy was vented into a phased space-time bubble. That did turn the engineering section into subatomic particles. How did you make a jump without us pressing a button to activate the drive? You can't move any ship you are aboard, I demanded. After the Dutchman's spine snapped, I was no longer aboard the aft section of the ship. Duh! He did say that one aloud. I am sorry, Joe. The Guardians caught the ship in a space-time warp, and there was nothing I could do to save the engineering section. It was the focus of the Guardians' attack. I did the only thing I could think of that allowed the forward section of the ship to survive. Since the incident, I have been trying to determine whether there was another, better course of action. So far, I have not been able to think of anything else I could have done. It is truly remarkable that I was able to prevent the ship from being destroyed entirely. You know, when you think about it, we are probably screwed, but I shaped a jump field bubble that protected us from reactors and drive capacitors exploding practically right on top of us. Nobody has ever done that before. I impressed even myself with that one. Who the man, huh? Me. I'm the man. Damn, I am still awesome. Excuse me if I don't immediately express my admiration for your continued awesomeness, Skippy. Oh, no problem, Joe. You're busy right now. There will be plenty of time to properly thank me later. he announced with cheery cluelessness. If, you know, we survive. If... Oh, man, you are slow sometimes, Joe, but please, try to keep up with current events, he said wearily. We lost all three reactors and any ability to move through space. Our long-term, even medium-term survival is very much in question. What's the condition of the lifeboat? Unknown. The docking platform for the lifeboat is still attached to the spine, and... Okay, yes, the lifeboat is still there, but it is not responding. That was not good. The lifeboat had its own reactor and life support. Some of the crew could survive there for months, hopefully. How bad is the damage overall, Skippy? Unknown, Joe. Most sensors are offline or providing conflicting data. I am too busy with damage control on problems I know of. I can't spare resources right now to get the sensor suite working at full capacity. I could use another set of eyes out there. All right. We need to know the ship's status ASAP. Major Desai, take a dropship and fly out to give us a view. You don't want me here as chief pilot, Colonel? She asked, surprised. Usually in a crisis, I wanted her in one of the two pilot couches. To fly what? I responded. We're not going anywhere. Someone else can control the thrusters. We need two dropships, if we have two that are flight-worthy.
Yes, sir.
She unstrapped from the couch and pulled herself carefully hand over hand in zero gravity.
We should launch the Ready Bird right now.
Major Sims, I asked.
On it, Colonel. Launching the Ready Bird in 4 minutes.
U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Samantha Reed silently mouthed holy shit to her Chinese Air Force co-pilot, knowing that sentiment required no translation. Reed and Wu had been seated in a Theranan Falcon dropship when the Flying Dutchman jumped into Hotel California. That was an assignment they had not especially wanted, sitting in the cockpit of the Ready Bird in a docking bay far from the center of the action in the CIC. The odds of needing a dropship to do anything in deep interplanetary space had seemed pretty slim before the jump. Now their Falcon was hanging in space 500 meters from the ship, acting as an external sensor platform for Skippy and the CIC crew. Technically, they were half a kilometer from the middle and forward sections of the hull, because what remained of the Flying Dutchman was no longer a starship, or any kind of ship. Ships, by definition, were capable of moving on their own. Other than thrusters, which Reed could see firing intermittently to gradually halt the now lazy spinning of the hull, the Dutchman was not capable of even controlling its motion in space. It certainly could not, would not ever again, be capable of moving anywhere on its own.
Major Sims, are you seeing this?
Affirmative, Sims replied tersely.
The back third of the ship is missing, ma'am. It's not broken loose and hanging behind us. It is gone. There is nothing left of it.
Understood. Sims was all business. Swing around and give us a view of the ship's nose. Be advised, Desai is exiting the docking bay on the port side now.
There is another ship in the vicinity. Understood.
Pratam. Reed used Desai's call sign, which meant first, in the Hindi language.
Avoid the aft end of the spine. There are sparks coming from cables and pieces breaking off.
Aft end is a navigation hazard, acknowledged, Fireball, Desai replied. Sammy winced at hearing her call sign. It was a long story going back to ROTC in high school, and one she wished she could forget, wished everyone would forget. Then she pushed it out of her mind as she gently guided the Falcon around to the Flying Dutchman's nose, which contained sensor gear and projectors for defense shields and the stealth field. She backed the dropship away a full kilometer to be safe. There was debris floating around, with more small pieces regularly breaking off the aft end of the spine. Thrusters on the ship's hull fired sporadically, but the structure kept spinning and wobbling around its long axis. Sammy guessed that with the entire aft end of the ship missing, the navigation computer was having difficulty determining how to compensate for the new center of gravity. Center of balance, she reminded herself. There was no gravity in deep space. She was still automatically thinking in terms of flying an aircraft on Earth, and she needed to stop doing that. Seeing the Dutchman's thrusters actually popping and exhausting gases into space was alarming. Thrusters were reserved for emergency use. Ordinarily, attitude control was accomplished using an exotic reactionless system internal to the ship. The ship's advanced attitude control system was either offline or unable to cope with the wildly off-balance structure that remained of the Star Carrier.
Jinhai,
she used her co-pilot's given name after silencing the transmitter.
What are we going to do?
She stared at her wide-eyed. There were 9,000 light-years from Earth and a hostile star system without a ship.
Right now, Wu scowled. We assess the damage.
Reed looked at the ship, what was left of the ship. The nose had slowly rotated past, and now the Falcon was on the starboard side with a good view of the docking platform where the lifeboat was attached. There were no lights on the exterior of the relay station they used as a lifeboat. Normally, navigation lights blinked slowly fore and aft when they were in deep space and the stealth field was not engaged, especially when people or dropships were flying around. Those navigation lights operated on backup power, so the entire system must be offline. That was not a good sign.
After that?
After that? Wu zoomed the display for a closer look at the aft end of the Dutchman's forward hull, which was blackened with scorch marks.
I plan to panic.
Reed looked at the scorch marks, which extended halfway to the nose of the forward hull section.
You won't be alone.